What's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. Follow me on Twitter, Gab at Conspiracy or JC, if you want to support the show. First of all, thanks to all my Patreon subscribers. You guys are the best. I have a few people on Anchor as well. So kind of you, really. It means so much that you value the information I spend a lot of time on. I work a full-time gig, and I do this in my spare time, and I put a lot of work into it, a lot of hours. Reading constantly, and it's helped me. I don't watch any TV. Well, we watch Seinfeld when we eat dinner, but that is it. So thank you guys for supporting. It really means a lot. So we're going to get to it right away. It's a long one. I hope I can go the whole time here because it's a long episode. So chronology. I did an episode on the Dark Ages about how it's fake, how it is never existed. So that like warmed me up to this theory. So if you need to listen to that before this, you can, but you're here now. So approach it with an open mind. Like most of my listeners, they all have an open mind. And I don't think it's too hard for any of us to believe that everything we've been taught is probably a lie. So here we go. All of our dating systems date back. They're based off of ancient Rome and ancient Egypt. So right off the bat, that was supposedly a very long time ago. And it's not like we have the internet or history books I'll get to it, but the evidence that we have, once we get there, you're going to see, I wouldn't put much stock in that. So Scaliger was one of the first, he was like the founding father of the system that we adapted, 1540 to 1609. And then he dies. His work was concluded by Dionysius Batavius, 1583 to 1652. So these two guys, I didn't learn too much about their history, but they wouldn't just pick a year something would happen. They would tell you the month, the day, the hour, which obviously is a little suspicious how something that happened 2,000 years before they existed, they can tell you the hour that it happened. Maybe back then they didn't think like that. They were like, wow, they must really know what they're talking about because they're telling you the hour that it started. But there weren't the only guys at the time trying to do this. There was many chronologists. Why they arbitrarily picked them, I'm sure there was something with corruption that involved in it, but we don't know that thing. We don't know that what happened there. So yeah, so it was just not a solid system at all. Okay, I don't know why we picked it. A lot of issues. So many people, that was the 50s. So even in the 16th century, people were criticizing or also doing this work that didn't agree with Scaliger. There was a Jesuit historian who was an archaeologist, 1646 to 1724, and Jesuit, maybe he was killed later, but he disagreed with it. A guy in 1902, Robert Baldoff, wrote History and Criticisms, and he claimed that not only is ancient history, but early Middle Ages is all a forgery from the Renaissance epoch. And I almost am leading after we'll get to the end of this, you'll have your own theory, but I'm leaning towards that all ancient history happened much earlier and the middle, but we'll get to it. English scientist Edwin Johnson, 1842-1901. And I also liked his theory. His theory was basically that we're a lot closer in time to the Greeks and Romans than what Scaliger and the chronological tables tell us, which I think is absolutely right. And then this is interesting, Isaac Newton, also 1642, 1727, he also disagreed. And now Isaac, he was a member of the Royal Society, which tried to remove the monarchical power and remove religious power that the church had. So do I take his information with, I take it with a grain of salt. Did he probably create the theory of gravity to do help perpetuate the ball earth theory? Probably, yeah, probably. Was he also the leader of this? Well, allegedly he was the leader of the Priory of Sion, which believes the Merovingian bloodline existed. Maybe. I read that Holy Blood, Holy Grail book. If you don't know what I'm talking about, just forget it. He did have if he was a part of that Priory of Sion, they basically had a Gnostic belief that stemmed from the Cathars, which were eventually like slaughtered supposedly, but basically they were occult worshiping individuals. And I'm not a great Gnostic scholar, so there's so many other people that are better in that area. But he wasn't perfectly clean, right? That's what we can say. So he was not only a mathematician, a subverter of Christianity. I put that note. That was a good line. So he was not a fan of Scaliger and the Petavius chronology. He wrote the Chronology of Ancient Kingdoms. That was the book that he was working on towards the end of his life. And he was a very smart individual, right? I will give him that. He was very intelligent. He based all of this chronological work on scientific ideas. And so he also believed that most events preceding Alexander the Great were much closer to us in time. And he thought that Scaliger was only correct starting in the 4th century. So, I mean, that's still pretty, he's saying he's pretty right on the, and I think this is incorrect. I think a lot of it's wrong even up to there. But well, you know, that's, he's a very smart man. I'll give him some credit, give him some props on that. So how well was it received? Well, here's a quote from after he like wrote it. There's a whole, they're the fruit of 40 years of labor, diligent research, and tremendous erudition. And basically, Newton, what he did is he studied all major works on ancient history at the time, all primary sources beginning with the ancient and oriental mythology. So that's pretty good. Basically, though, all the review, like the book, the Amazon reviews that were left, was basically they were saying, yes, Isaac is a very smart man, very smart guy, but he was hanging around in the crazy realm too long and he went nuts. And they ridiculed him, which is funny. So he suggested, like I said, the ancient chronology of Egypt and Greece were much closer. Egypt, Scaliger says Egypt was 3000 BC. Newton claimed 946 BC, so 2000 years removed. The myth of Theseus, I looked that up and now I don't remember. 1400 BC is what Scaliger says. Isaac says 936, so 700 years. 330 years earlier with the Trojan War. Ancient Egypt, they say, you know, exists thousands of years, which I never even thought about that, but they say, you know, lasts thousands of years, thousands. And Isaac Newton says that the reign was probably more like 330 years and 1800 years earlier, which honestly makes a lot more sense because how does an empire last thousands of years? That's long, you know? And especially, I just don't see that. I don't see that happening. We have yet to see Egypt and is like the, in Rome, I guess, the Mongols maybe, like they're long empires, but thousands of years. Have we seen any evidence of what happened in America, the place that's supposedly the most free? And yes, outside forces have played a role. How does a population last? It gets lazy. It gets lazy. It sacrifices freedoms for alleged securities, right? So it was, you know, he's smart. Everyone knows who Isaac Newton is. His work's getting like, there's rumors he's working on something crazy. And his work, the Princess of Wales wanted to read it. So he said, I'm going to give you this manuscript, but promise that no one else will read it or see it. She said, deal. And she broke it. Damn, she broke it. She let a Frenchman look at it. He quickly copied it, translated it, added it, and even added his own work to it. And the Frenchman wrote two letters to Isaac saying, please let me publish this book. Let me publish this book. Isaac says no every time. Joke's on him. It was already in the works. So the book's published. Isaac receives a copy of the book, 1725. And he said, you didn't even add everything. He was going to add more research, but he dies before he can release this more in-depth and thorough book. And, you know, we could go check it out. But what do you know? Not a single trace or copy of the book exists. And I know this is wild speculation, right? Did he get killed for this? I don't know. People have certainly been killed for less, right? So everyone called him crazy. They like hushed up circulation. It's just amazing the power that some group has. I don't know who it is yet, but there's some group. And like the one Amazon review, like I said, he was like, the article talked about genius and insanity, you know, basically like they're a thin line, and which is true, but so they just wrote him off as a nut job. And he wasn't the only, and which what's going to be interesting is he wasn't the only author and mathematician who wrote this type of book. Okay. That's going to be key. And if you're watching, I have this picture here I like skipped over the notes because this is 19 pages of notes and I got a lot to get through. But basically this picture was made in 1455 and it's supposed to be about an event in the 4th century BC. But there's a castle in the background. People are in Renaissance attire. So now if I was painting a photo, I'm a horrible painter. Olivia is a painter. My grandfather's a painter. If you see that painting up there behind me, he was a great painter. But if you were painting of a previous time period, thousand of years earlier, even 300 years earlier, would you paint it with them holding a cell phone and saying, this is from whatever? No, you wouldn't. So just an example of how there's something going on, right? So next guy that also disagreed with this, Nikolai Alexandrovich Morozov. Now, he was a mathematician, like I said, 1854 to 1946. He was a scientist related to Peter the Great. I'm not good on my Russian history yet, so I can't tell you anything about Peter the Great. But he gets imprisoned in 1881. I just thought of something in my next book I'm reading. But we'll get to that next episode. I wonder if he's from the Tartaria in Russia. Anyway, so he gets imprisoned. So while he's there, he studies chemistry, physics, astronomy, math, history. Very smart man, obviously. And after 25 years, he gets released. And he gets to run this Academy of Sciences, his USSR. So, you know, very powerful guy. And he found, this is key. He found the repetition of names and titles in history. Now, if you didn't listen to my Dark Ages episode, the Dark Ages did this all the time. The Merovingian kings ended right before the Dark Ages epoch. And so their names are like Clothar Clothar. Okay, that's the last king name. Well, the Carolingian kings, not the Merovingian, the Carolingian kings take over during the Dark Ages. Their kings are named Lothar and Flothar. And this happens not just in European history, it happens with the Islamic warlords and caliphs. And I can't remember those names because they're like Arabic names, you understand. But it's the same thing. And the same battles happen 200 years later during the Dark Ages. So this is something they're doing. They're extending our history. And, you know, you could say, did Nikolai copy Newton? No, he had no idea about Newton's work before him. He just had a great mind and he started looking at things that didn't make sense. So he was writing a book. USSR was running low on paper at the time because they're commies. And so they couldn't make too much, maybe couldn't make too many copies. So how true is, let's start with the first like step, Roman chronology. Foundation of Rome occurs immediately after the Trojan War. And this allegedly took place 13th century BC. All I can think of Trojan War is Brad Pitt. I think that's the Trojan War. So it took place 13th century BC. And then it took 500 years after that for Rome to start. So another story that doesn't make sense. So after the Trojan War, some general, you know, the people that left, they landed in Rome. That's the story. And then they took 500 years to build the Roman Empire, or, you know, start the Roman civilization. That doesn't, things move pretty quickly, even in ancient times, right? Regardless, you know, that can't be the case. We have so much evidence and manuscripts and writings, and that's absolutely not the case. There is a guy, one of the evidence that we have is a guy, Titus Livy. He was around 59 BC. He described the 700 years of the Roman Empire. He wrote 144 books. Only 35 survived. First publication of it was 1469, based on a manuscript of unknown origin. We should look at it today just to double check. Nope, it's actually currently lost. But you know what? They found 5 more manuscripts after that. And these manuscripts for sure don't fill 500 years for the fall of Troy. A lot of these made up names, that ghost names. So like they would have a king with a name and there's no evidence of this king ever existing, but they were written into Scaligerian history. And the same thing happened with Egypt and Greece. So these things called fasti, which had the names of like civil servants and years, it wouldn't match up with the names of the king. Like, so these things, fasces, that's one of the evidence they found. And it was like the names of civil servants in ancient Rome at that time. And so that's what they base a lot of these evidence off of. But they also have like military tribunal documents, which the names don't match. They just don't match. So like there isn't the same person existing in both times. I hope I'm explaining that correctly. So the two things of evidence we have, they don't coincide at all. They don't mesh. So what about other like, you know, people? So Herodotus, he's a famous historian, and he's an ancient historian, wrote lots on the work of ancient Egypt, but there's so many mistakes in his work. One mistake uses the name for a pharaoh who, according to Scaliger, is 1,200 years later than he says. Another mistake in his writing is 1,800 years. So they say his king's list doesn't occur with the fragments of evidence that we found, whatever that means. So Herodotus' version is also significantly shorter and much more compact than our modern chronology that we use. And there's so many of these mistakes from Herodotus, ancient, I don't know why I did this. If anyone listen, I did the quote things. I don't know why. I'm in that quotey finger mood, I guess. I talk with my hands a lot. So there's so many mistakes in Herodotus's compared to Scaliger's common chronology, but Herodotus, closer to the event, and he wrote little bios on each of the kings and how they related to each other in ancient Egypt. And they just write it off as him being mistaken. He even wrote the dates of solar eclipses. They say, like, oh, he did that incorrectly because on Scaliger's chronology, they wouldn't match up. So he also must have been somewhat blind because he wrote those dates wrong. And he's not alone. There's so many discrepancies between among the experts, like 2000 or 3000 years. And it just like proves that Scaliger chronology was arbitrarily or purposely chosen to extend for some reason. And I have like theories, but I don't know why. So that I basically just sum up. Herodotus, ancient guy, wrote what actually happened. Scaliger butchered it and extended it thousands of years. So Egyptology, which we base a lot of our history on, it only came into existence about 80 years ago, right? It was a very like private domain. It was hard to get access after it was started to ancient Egyptian documents and things like that. And so it's so I'm sure it wasn't propped up by some rich donor and said you better, and you know, made the director like, you need to follow this for this reason. And I'm sure he wouldn't then only pick people that agreed with what they said. So it's basically impossible to find out like today if that chronology matches up with someone said 300 years ago. Like the king's list makes zero sense, but we can't examine it again because it's in this circle and they control, they're the gatekeepers of that information that comes out of ancient Egypt. For example, in a dig, they found 13th century gold in a Egyptian like grave, or whatever you want to call it. So either this was not the right time. So it was either the 13th century, they were either way more advanced in ancient Egypt than they thought because it was like an intricate bracelet or something, or the dates are wrong. That's the only two options. So both ways challenges history. So problems in dating ancient sources. You know, ancient man, we have all this, and I was under this before I read this book too. We have all this evidence. Everyone agrees. All people agree that this was ancient times, blah, blah, blah. Well, I think that I sufficiently explained how the Dark Ages was inserted, but most of our manuscripts are found during the Renaissance epic that came after the Dark Ages. So first, who could read then, right? The same, just a clergyman. And also, so if we found ancient documents during the Renaissance, where the hell were they during the Dark Ages for 300 years? Because we were so stupid and living so backwards that wherever they were stored, no one opened it up. Human curiosity is probably one thing you can always bet on. If I have a lockbox and I say, don't look in there, or I see a lockbox on the street, eventually you're going to open it up. So where were these manuscripts hiding for 300 years during the supposed Dark Ages? But anyway, they're not. This is where they all come from. 19th century, two historians, Hogarth and Ross, published results calling out ancient Roman history. They claim it's a complete forgery. Events are misdated. And so, this is funny. So one of our ancient, one of the great ancient Roman things we base everything on was this guy named Poggio Bracciolone. He discovered and published all these books, Quintilian, Valerius Flaccus. I don't know any, tons. And, but all these things he published were his discoveries. So it was like all these Latin books about Petronius, Plautus, Cicero, Lucretius, all these books or manuscripts he found and published. Must be a very lucky guy. He had a gold mine, right? Like 20 manuscripts he found of ancient Rome and in the 1800s. And that's a major part of the manuscripts that exists of our Greek knowledge. And it's based on copies given by Byzantine emperors. Based on copies given by Byzantine 1500 years after the author's death. That's the major part of our manuscripts of Greek knowledge. Classical and ancient literature only surfaced during the Renaissance. Again, obscure origins, lack of documentation, like how they went through the Dark Ages. I think I said that already. The oldest copy of Cicero's text, who was like an ancient author, said to have been made in the 9th and 10th century. The original incomplete collection has perished long ago, but for some reason, the 14th, 15th century, everyone wants a copy of Cicero's writings. So I know I jumbled that there, my notes, I apologize. I do my best not to, I type it really fast. So basically all this ancient knowledge resurfaces in the Renaissance epoch, not before, right then. So for thousands of years, we went without having a clue that these people existed, or we knew maybe some people knew they existed. I don't think so. No one knew, you know, about them. And then all a resurgence, like excitement for this stuff. So in the 14th, 15th century, everyone wants a copy of the Cicero guy from ancient times. So a guy in 1420, Professor Gasparona Berziza, he wanted to fill the gaps of the incomplete collection of Cicero's texts. And he was going to just write it himself because he knew he could do it. But wait, a miracle happens. A forlorn manuscript is found with all of Cicero's text is unearthed in the little Italian town of Lodi. Berziza, he has his students, they decipher the ancient script to produce a full copy. They completed the puzzle. And then you know what happens? When you know, they misplace that manuscript. It becomes lost and disappears forever. So all we have of Cicero is what Gasparonio Berzizi makes. And in 1428, it's literally gone forever. So after 8 years, it's gone, right? Oh, this picture here was the one Russian guy that did the thing. So here is Cicero in this picture. And if you're not seeing, it's just a guy sitting on a chair with a red like cape and like, everyone's in Renaissance garb is what I'm saying. So why again would you draw ancient Cicero writing and working in medieval garb? You just wouldn't, unless they were your contemporaries, right? This picture was written in the 14th or 15th century sometime. So another example, Caius Suetonius. All of his hail back to the ancient manuscripts. Supposedly we had it in the 818 during the Dark Ages, and it was only brought to light in the 16th century. Another manuscript of his was found in Germany in 1425 by, of course, this guy Poggio Bracciolone. This did not survive, but 20 of the copies made in the 15th century in Italy did. So again, we're just seeing like, where did our ancient knowledge stem from? These manuscripts that were all made in the Renaissance. I'm just going to keep doing these examples just so you have the dating of ancient sources. Manuscript is by another guy discovered in 1497, Vitruvius. Oh, this was interesting. Sorry I'm jumbled around, everyone. I'm trying not to care as much because if you're listening, I never mind when people make mistakes when they're talking. So anyway, so Vitruvius, he talks about heliocentrism, which is more accurate calculations than Copernicus was. He was off by circulation of Saturn by 0.00007, Mars 0.006, all these dates. Now, I'm pretty sure the Earth is possibly flat, but that almost adds more credence to how these forgeries work. But regardless, he is presenting this information very early, supposedly very, you know. So the name of his works is copied in 1414. This guy named Alberti, B and V sounds similar in like ancient language or in Latin. So he studies the same mathematical and architecture studies. He has similar theories. So they claim, or this book is saying, that Alberti really admired Vitruvius and he wanted to emulate him. That's why he studied the same exact things as Vitruvius. And basically, he then wrote a book. His like ideas coincide word for word with Vitruvius. I'm trying to like say is that it's this copy of ideas and knowledge. Like it wasn't ancient knowledge that was lost. It was just came up with in the 14th century. And for some reason they wanted to make it longer. So like Vitruvius, his ideas weren't new. Like they didn't find Vitruvius' work until this Alberti guy wrote all the same kind of information. And then after he dies, they find the manuscript of another guy. So it's just, there isn't emulation. It's like, I talked about this in my Dark Ages episode, like Renaissance art it coincides with ancient Roman art. Like it's a similar style. It's not because they're like, wow, that looks great, let's redo it. It's because it happened same time, right? And it's not just art and it's not just writing. It's like everything. There's so many parallels between the classical age and the medieval age. And there's so many, like science, Euclid, ancient Archimedes. Not a single copy of Euclid Elements has reached our time. There was a copy made in 888. Lots of copies from the 13th century, though. And there's a panoramic view of Rome by the ancient Euclid, except there's an issue. Here it is, if you're watching. This is ancient Rome by Euclid. But there is Gothic cathedrals in it, which is a medieval architecture. So unless they had the same architecture in ancient Rome as they did in medieval Rome, that makes no sense, right? It just makes no sense. And so it's architecture, it's art, even math. Scientists in Europe were using, there was a guy, Diophantus, so many Latin names, I know it's tough. Scientists in Europe were using his methods of algebra before the book was discovered. So in 1597, they find a manuscript with the work that people were just doing, and they, do you see what I mean? Like they do it, then they die, they steal that work, say it was from an ancient time, they found a manuscript, and look what he was studying back then. How do you lose knowledge? Right? You don't. You like don't, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me at all. If anyone can enlighten me how you lose knowledge over hundreds of years. People are like, you know, that these groundbreaking things are something people would learn. Other people would know, it would be passed on, it would be grown, not reduced. Modern editions of Archimedes have been based on a lost manuscript that was found in the 15th century. Also, Archimedes' work was also found in 1907. Estimated Archimedes' manuscript supposedly reached Europe in 1204, translated in 1269, and then amazingly, a complete text was found in 1884. But the portrait of his from his book of Archimedes was also another Renaissance. This is a Renaissance study. He's in Renaissance. He's not in ancient garb. If you're not looking, it's just like a funny picture with that was also made in the 1400s. Or this was from his book, so it was ancient. And yet, why? If it's ancient, why doesn't it look ancient? Right? That doesn't make any sense. Okay, that was tough. There is also another Kepler who discovers ellipses in astronomy. He dies. Then they find Apollonius manuscripts, who was ancient. He discovered ellipses before Kepler. And I hate to use this word because there's this group on Twitter that have ruined it, but they're templates. They're using templates of people and just extending it. So they 1400s, were making all these scientific breakthroughs. It's the Renaissance. Well, you know what? The guy dies. Okay. Actually, someone was doing this earlier. Look at this manuscript we just found. It's ancient time. They were so smart then. How do they know this? You see, I hope I did that chapter okay. So I know I jumped around a little bit and wasn't too clear. It's hard to read notes and talk, you know, you don't memorize it. Okay. Sorry. Chapter 6, Timekeeping in the Middle Ages. This was a crazy chapter. Oh, hold your horses, people. So Scaliger wasn't the only timekeeping attempt, right? I told you that there was other, but think about this. How did they tell time before the 13th and 15th century? What'd they use? So clocks from medieval Europe were sundials, hourglasses, these really rare water clocks that I have no idea how those work, but very rare, like only the king has one. So sundials, you know, it only works in sunny weather. So how do they even tell, like, time? So, in the 9th century, candles were used for timekeeping. Like King Alfred, he would take them on these long journeys and order them to be burned one after the other to know what time it was, like maybe an hour per candle, right? That doesn't sound too accurate for me. They even did this, the king and the King Charles V in the 13th and 14th century. Monks, they kept track of time by, they knew how long it would take them to read like Bible story, you know, pages in the Bible. And that was a major way of timekeeping. And the church bells were the main source of clocks. You know, that was your iPhone clock, that was your watch. And just already, like, how could these people know time accurately when they were using sundials? So if it was cloudy, you don't know what time it is. And then chronometers, they lacked the minute hand for a long time. So yeah, so you could just see how time was not something that was very easy to do back then. I think I talked about this in the other episode, how biblical events refer to every day in Genesis as 1,000 years old. So every day was 1,000 years. So you can see like how people are getting confused. It's very easily to like add time, because if one day in Genesis is 1,000 years, clerical people are telling people the time. I mean, things are like just getting so muddled. There's no source to check with. Here, I think I have the next. Oh, this was interesting as well. Biblical epics, so courteousness was like a thing that they attributed to the ancient Romans, like that was a virtue that they wanted you to obviously be courteous. This was like a knightly virtue, right? So it's like they're just repeating these stories, so because they're running out of ideas. What if like the Crusades weren't coming back to get the land that the Muslims took? What if it was actually to punish the actual executions of the Savior? Mind-blowing, right? And the excuse why drawing biblical people in medieval attire that they give like now is because the artists were like confused, or they didn't have the information, or they liked drawing it that way. It's just, it makes zero sense, right? It makes zero sense. So when I say like gladiators, that's like another point. You think of ancient Rome, right? That's what everyone thinks, Colosseum. Gladiator fights took place in Europe in the 14th century. They took place in Naples in 1344 AD, it was just the same. They fought to the death, just like the so-called ancient ones. And it's just an interesting point. So we automatically think gladiator ancient times because they say that happened in ancient times, but it happened until the 1344. So what if they just extended it? You see how easy that would be? Who would know? Who would know? You wouldn't know. You can't date anything because it's all rocks. You can't date anything because carbon dating is a total joke. Yeah. So anyway, I know I keep saying this after each chapter, but now that I remember my notes. This was mind-blowing. I like brought this up on a few shows already. Well, we have all the biblical texts. That's how you know how old things are, and religious texts. Well, dating of religious sources is super shaky, since most of it's based on the authority of medieval theologians who had no one that could question or check them. Right off the bat, rough. Carbon dating? No, doesn't exist. Biblical manuscripts have reached our time are all from the medieval period. The oldest Greek Bible of the manuscripts of the Alexandria Vatican, all of them dated. Oh, the Greek is the Bible is the oldest manuscripts that we have. And all of them are dated from ancient Greece or ancient times or right around the turn of the millennium because the handwriting style, it's not carbon dated. It's not what type of paper dated. It's dated from the handwriting style. And no one knows how old the Vatican Codex is, but it manifested the Greek one. No one knows how old that is, but it manifested in the Vatican around 1475. How convenient. How convenient. So no one knows how old it is. Came around though in 1475. Another biblical codex known as the Alexandria Codex was given to an English king in 1628. That's another one of the oldest ones. The Codex of Mount Sinai was discovered, you guessed it, 14th century. So three of the oldest codices of the Bible only surfaced after the 15th century. Those are our oldest ones, and they all surfaced in the 15th century. They must have just been on a digging spree, finding everything, right? Antiquity, I told you, was based on style of handwriting. So that's so weak to base something on handwriting style. That doesn't make any sense. How can you prove something like that? And there is no complete or part complete ancient Bibles in existence before 1475. Damn, right? Before 1475, none existed. The oldest biblical books of Zechariah, Malachi, that dated to the alleged 6th century. There's Hebraic manuscripts of the Bible, none predating the 9th century. Many of the 13th century, they're allegedly kept in national libraries. The two second oldest manuscripts, 916 and 109 AD. However, all these dates again are the handwriting analysis. They said that like there's Babylonian punctuation and that's why it said the 10th century. However, even though our AD and BC dating didn't happen until the 1011th century. If you listen to last episode, you can get all that stuff because they weren't interested in how long Jesus was since Jesus was born. They want to know when he would return. The oldest document was that complained that contains the complete Old Testament was 1008 AD. So supposedly the biblical canon was agreed upon by the Laodicean Council in 363. That's that picture that I have up. If anyone's watching, I'm sure that was painted in the same 15th century. It was made official, though. The canon was really made official at the New Trident Council in 1545. A lot of things are happening during this time. Many books are destroyed in the Trident Council, ones that they deemed apocryphal or heretical, like Chronicles of the Judaic and Israeli Kings. They were destroyed because they described a different history differing from the approved Scaliger historians. Basically what I'm saying is that all these manuscripts, even though they are old, they're not as old as I would assume, or you would probably assume. And they're all based on handwriting based from the Scaliger chronology It's all built on a house of cards. It was made fit. That's the way it is. And you can't question it. If you question it, you're crazy. You're thrown out of academia. You're Isaac Newton, even if you have clout, you're written off as a psycho. You see, like this event that I have up of 363, there's nothing that exists from this at all. At all. There's something like going on here. In 1902, this Englishman, last name Nash, he purchased a fragment of Egyptian papyrus manuscript. No one can agree on the date of the time right now. And there's reasons why that. So there were dates as far back as the second century to the Crusades. They said carbon dating, which I've already talked, it doesn't work. Look into it. Carbon dating is the biggest scam in the world. They only use it if it agrees with what the Scaliger chronology says. So that agreed with the Scaliger chronology, but most historians say it's actually a medieval document. So ancient Egypt, medieval, how does that work? The issue with this document is it contains the same type handwriting as many of these ancient works. So by proving this as the date of the medieval time, it would take all these ancient manuscripts down with it. You see, it's built on a house of cards. Now, not only do we not have any old texts from this time that are truly ancient, there's so much other issues with these old texts. So how do you read a text that's written purely in consonants? Hebrew had neither signs for vowels or any signs to replace them. The Old Testament written literally in nothing but consonants. Ancient Slavonic text, also just consonants. They don't even separate individual words from each other. So imagine if I just smacked my hands on the keyboard and didn't hit A, E, I, O, U, or sometimes Y. And good luck deciphering what I was trying to say, right? Good luck. You wouldn't be able to. How do you do that? How could you read just a sheet of letters and tell me what it says in another language? You could. So ancient Egyptian, also nothing but consonants. Egyptian kings, they are rendered totally arbitrarily, the names. So paper was like hard to get back in those days, you know, papyrus. So all of their king names were shortened on the original ancient documents, if they even had them. But all the names are shortened. So how did you know what their name was? They just made it up. All of this stuff, they made it up. If we take the Hebraic Bible manuscript, we'll find consonants filled with dots, other signs that are supposed to be referring to missing vowels. So like B.LD, and that dot means E. But it doesn't, this wasn't included in the ancient Hebraic Bibles. It was filled in by the readers of that theologians at that time with their best ability using common sense and oral tradition. For example, BLD, if it said, you know, I don't know the sentence, I can't think of all that, but BLD is written in the ancient Hebraic manuscript. God, BLD. It could be God blood, God bled, God bold, God build, God boiled, God's bald, etc. RVR could be river, rover, raver. And so how did they decipher it? Even for priests, the meaning of scriptures were tough and could only be understood like using tradition and talking to fill it in. And add on top of that, there's no grammatical rules to follow in ancient Hebraic languages. There were no verb, like adverb, past tense, post tense, none of it. It's only remedied in supposedly the 7th or 8th century when the Masoretes processed the Bible. They added symbols that stood for vowels. Again, it was the intuition and oral traditions. And after they did this, the Jews started holding these manuscripts with intense vigor. You would not be allowed to view it. Information was not up for debate. And the common opinion, so they proved some of these. Okay, and this was brought up then in the 16th, 17th century. You see, this doesn't make sense. So they did this in the 7th or 8th century. No one knew about it for 1,000 years. And then the 16th, 17th century, it caused a huge issue in Europe. It was right around like the Reformation, I think. And people thought this was the end of religion, because if the vowels weren't found in divine inspiration, a mere human added these vowels, relatively recent, how could this be the holy text, right? But then it was all forgotten in like 100 years after this. So I was kind of just touching on this. So why did it happen in the 16th, 17th century? 500 years, it would be pretty ingrained that these books were, you know, no one knows that today. That's a perfect example. No one, I bet, no, 2%. Now you guys listening know that the holy books were added by, the vowels were added by people in supposedly, let's just say they weren't added in the 7th or 8th century. They were added in the 16th or 17th century because everything's much shorter. So no one here knows it 500 years later, right? So it would be pretty ingrained then. So why did it cause such a stir? They were written much more recently. And I'm not saying this to question, because I am a Christian. I believe in God. I believe in Jesus being resurrected. But I do believe that there's information that is hiding from us. I'm sure there's errors in the Bible that weren't written away from these original documents. But maybe, I don't know, that might be heretical to say. But I don't know. I haven't thought, but all I know is I believe in that God and Jesus. And I'm not saying this to cause confusion or to push you away from Christianity. If anything, I would push you towards it. But there's something that, you know, this is what happened, right? This is what happened. It was all written in Constance. The Quran, the same issues. It was supposedly written in the Dark Ages, but didn't exist. Again, check out my Phantom Time episode for proof that Muhammad and the Islamic religion is all a heretical sect of Christianity, but it's written in all consonants. Also, sounds of R and L were confused in the Middle Ages. Oh, here, yeah, this is good. Amsterdam is the example. It was called Amsterdam. If you see Amsterdam, it was written here. And it was also called Amsterdam, R's and L's. See, and down here in the inscription, it says Amsterdam. Supposedly, it was published in a navigation book in 1625 with the spelling that we know, but the engraving on the same page gives the old name of Amsterdam. So this doesn't mean that only a lot was inferred in the ancient manuscripts, any ancient document, not just the Bible, all of it that they supposedly found. That means towns of Europeans, cities, names, totally unstable until the creation of the printing press. Because how would they know? You wouldn't. And if it was an ancient language and you came to this land and they said it's called this, just like we did with in America. I'm from the Northeast. There's like places called that are Aliquippa, Tamaqua, all these Native American words. It's not how they said it. That's what you heard, right? So you can see the issues that this will cause. So chapter 9. Now this is, so again, I just want to say this, that the Bible, I believe in Jesus. I believe in Jesus, the resurrection. I think with God in your life, you can do so many things. So this is not a knock on the Bible. I think that this chronology theory actually proves the Bible, that it was much more recent. So, and that it's not where we're, this is why I think they did it to change the names or to do something. There was confusion to do this. There's some goal. Okay. Archaeology of the Old Testament. Consonant sequences for cities and countries and rulers. I don't know what that means. They were arbitrarily chosen in the Middle East, the events of the Bible. It was arbitrarily chosen. And that binds biblical events to that area because of Scaligerian chronology. But archaeological evidence doesn't disprove, but it doesn't prove this choice of location. There's been pioneers of archaeology in the 19th century of Mesopotamia. You know, they very religious time, so they would push, they would get lots of support because they were trying to find findings of biblical stories and things like that, and they couldn't find any. In the 20th century, another guy performed excavation in the biblical town of Ur. Didn't work, nothing there. Scholarian history says all biblical patriarchs occurred in modern Mesopotamia and Syria, Egypt, Moses. There's no evidences there. And I know this is a crazy thought, but what if we're looking in the wrong area for this evidence? What if it's not in the Middle East? And I know that might be like a crazy thought at this time, but I already proved that or showed you that the names of places changes in a heartbeat. In a generation, it could change. And it didn't stick until the printing press. So, okay. The Great Exodus with Moses. No evidence but the name of the city. So Mount Sinai location is unknown. Bible states that Mount Horeb is where the revelation was given. If going by like biblical clues, Mount Sinai is volcano. Well, modern day Mount Sinai that we've named in the Middle East is not a volcano. And some say it's in modern day Kadesh. I don't know where that is, but also there's no mountains there that are a volcano. Bible says the Lord rained upon Sodom and Gomorrah with brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven. So Scaligerian says that's happened in modern Mesopotamia. There's no volcanoes in modern Mesopotamia. Other examples, like just people being mistaken. There's lots of examples of this in the Bible that don't match up with the area we picked. And I'll get more into as we continue here. In 20th century, a tablet archive was found in the city of Uma, Mesopotamia. Uma isn't mentioned in the Bible. It's not a biblical town. The excavations were stopped and they scattered all this evidence without being studied because this is where the biblical events happened. It's under the ground, deep, has to be ancient. Where's the biblical evidence, right? There's no evidence of this Egyptian slavery of the Jews. The name of the Pharaoh is just Scaligeri juggling of names and dates. Again, could there be another country that went by Egypt? That's totally possible, right? When did we pick Egypt? And I wanted to bring this up. A friend of mine on Twitter, he's listening probably, Cat Ferret or something when he goes by. But he brought up, so the Jews were in Egypt. They never mentioned the pyramids, which supposedly happened 2,000 years before them. No, I think probably because Egypt isn't where we think. I think this biblical epic happened in another location than besides the Middle East. Bible talks about locations of Jews that went into Exodus. None can be proven. In the Middle East. Biblical destruction of Jericho is well known. An Arabic settlement that's identified as biblical Jericho. Again, no archaeological evidence that they're picking the Middle East for, I think, to cover something or to trick us. The entire Mesopotamia biblical theory of where it is totally questionable. Not just the Old Testament, New Testament. Explain the fact that the Jerusalem was destroyed in 66 to 73 BC. Jews forbidden to come anywhere near the city. And I did all this Knights Templar episode and all that. That's like what people would say, like the Holy City, there's the Wailing Wall and all this stuff like that. But they don't, like there's so many years after when this stuff happened, like the Wailing Wall. Oh, I don't remember when it was built. It's from like Solomon's 3.0 temple. It wasn't from when the people of Tyre built it, right? It wasn't. It was from much later. Much later. Like they just, the historical, they don't hold up the evidence. So here's a picture from 1470. It depicts the pillaging of Jerusalem by Syrian kings Antiochus, the medieval author. This was in the 1470s again, another painting then. They must just and look at it. If you're not looking, it's a clearly, it's like a, if you thought of a medieval town, that's what it looks like. It's a medieval town. They're looting it, the city of Jerusalem. They're wearing full iron, like what you would think a knight in shining armor was wearing. And it's not, again, why are they drawing these pictures of ancient times in medieval style? This was real wild. A Catholic church has been claiming the house, the very house that Virgin Mary had lived in, located in this Italian town of Loreto since the 13th century. And Pope Urban, he, you know, holy that, or, you know, miracled that in 1387. So very interesting, okay? Italian town. In 1891, Pope Urban celebrated 600 years of the Loreto's miracle, thus, you know, the 1300 miracle. So why, like, this house is in Italy. So if it, that we don't have stories of Italy with the biblical town, right? Very odd. In 1940s, excavations by the Pope under the Vatican crypts, they made these like outlandish statements, like they found the Apostle Peter in the crypt and they had to take that away. But what if, this is also what I was thinking, I don't know the history enough about the Vatican. I know it's changed locations, but say, what if biblical stories didn't happen in the Middle East, but they happened in Italy, right? I feel like that makes sense. We have this Mary Magdalene story, or is Mary Magdalene? Yeah. Miracle of, oh geez. It's a long episode. Virgin Mary, sorry. Virgin Mary's birth in this Italian town. So what if that's the more accurate location? And I'm gonna prove more reasons why that possibly is true. You can't, all like the location of the town of Emmaus, which is near my hometown, is where like Jesus appeared before his disciple after his resurrection. That cannot be determined in the Middle East. Can't find Nazareth, Capernaum, Golgotha, anywhere in modern Palestine. So what if it was somewhere else? And I think that's the case. So the location, and it's not just biblical events, ancient historical events, the locations of Troy and Babylon. Ancient historical events are even harder to identify than biblical. For example, Naples stands for new town. Naples, Italy, that still exists today. Carthage, which was the huge North Africa trading center, also translate as new town. Naples, there's a Naples in Palestine now. There's a Naples in Russia. There's Constantinople means new Rome, new town. You see like how this easily locations could just be could totally be jumbled, and you could be put and forced to believe whatever you want to believe or whatever they want you to believe. Troy is another example. Scaliger tells us the fate is around the 12th or 13th century BC. Troy plays an important role in medieval history. There was a well-known war in the 13th century town. It still exists. And according to Titus Livy, Troy and the entire region located in Italy, some medieval historians even identify Troy as Jerusalem. Homer's actual books turns into the accounts of devastation of Jerusalem, if that's the case, you know, the Trojan War. It's like the same story as the sacking of Jerusalem. Troy is a lion, is Ilion, a lion, while Jerusalem is known as Alion or Alia. So Alia Capitolonia. Basically, again, phonetically, Troy and Jerusalem are very similar in Hebraic or whatever language they're written in. So basically the point is like these ancient stories, from ancient to biblical, there could be medieval stories in different locations than what Scaligerian chronology tells us. Basically, it's just like a huge mess. I hope you understood what I'm saying here. Names of towns are changing constantly over these ancient times. Different languages are coming in. You can't even read it. There's no, how are they deciding this is where it happened? With no archaeological evidence. It's all off this guy, Scaliger and Dionysus. They just arbitrarily picked it. Babylon is modern day Mesopotamia. Medieval texts hold a different opinion. Babylon is in Egypt. Alexander the Great died in Egypt. According to Scaliger, he died in Mesopotamia. But there's a Babylon in Egypt. Babylon's a Greek name of a settlement that has been located opposite of the pyramids. What if Tower of Babel? Another historian tells us that Rome used to be called Babylon. Byzantine historians of the Middle Age called Baghdad Babylon. Insert picture for ancient Babylon as medieval town. Oh, another picture. If you're not watching, it's a similar picture. It is supposedly a picture of King Nimrod building the Tower of Babel. Problem with King Nimrod is he's wearing a knight suit of armor. He has Gothic cathedrals all behind him. And yeah, makes it a, why again would a medieval painting of 1470 painting Nimrod painted in his current day and age? You wouldn't do it. They'll say it's like, oh, it's a fantasy painting. It's a modern take. In 1470, they were thinking like that? I don't think so. The geography totally of Herodotus is totally at odds with Scaligerian version. Basically, Herodotus' maps are inverted. I'll get more into this in my next episode when I do the history of maps. But Herodotus' maps are totally inverted to the Scaligerian maps. They're just all inverted. Basically, they have the east coast on the left and the west coast on the right. And he gives like a reason why. I didn't really understand that at all. But all the 14th century maps, it was backwards compared to Scaligerian maps. Modern analysis of biblical geography. Biblical texts refer to volcanic activity. I think we were kind of touching on that. They describe Mount Sinai, Mount Zion, Horeb, all as volcanoes, like Pillar Mountain. That's what pillar is, a pillar of smoke above the volcano. The biblical quote is, and all the people saw the thunderings and the lightnings and the noise of the trumpet and the mountain smoking. Exodus. In Horeb, the mountain burned with fire unto the midst of heaven with darkness, clouds, and thick darkness. Destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. Lord rained upon Sodom and upon Gomorrah, brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven, smoke and furnace. And they say Mount Sinai that we have today in the modern Sinai Peninsula has never been a volcano. There's none in Syria or Palestine, none in Paris, none in Egypt, none in North Africa. But you know where there are a lot of volcanoes? Did you guess it? Italy and Sicily. There's actually a powerful volcano there. Huh. Destroyed the capital near the volcano. Two more cities were also destroyed near a volcano. Sodom and Gomorrah. There's one volcano in the entire Mediterranean that's the most powerful and active. Vesuvius. The famous Pompeii capital. There were two cities destroyed also with, according to this epic, Stabia and Heraculum. So phonetically, Stabia, Sodom, Heraculum, Gomorrah. Heraculum, how accurate is that name? Right? So they're close. Okay. So it's the same amount, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah, Harak, Stabium. Okay. Sinai, given to Vesuvius, is the Latin word sinus or sino, mountain with bowels. Horeb in Latin is horribilis. And remember, the cities have no vowels as well that we chose for the names of these things. So you can't go by the names given at all. So like Bible says to the land of CN, UN, or I guess there wouldn't be a U, but Canaanites, LBNN, Lebanon, however, Lebanon is often referred to as white Mont Blanc, meaning white mountain. And what if CNN means land of the Khan, land of the king? There's just all these examples. Unto the great river, the river PRT, is we say Euphrates. However, Mount Blanc Blanc has a river behind it with a large tributary named Prut. Bible says, when we departed from Horeb, we went through all that great, terrible, and terrible wilderness. The fields located near Vesuvius are a land of small volcanoes, layers of lava, terrible wilderness. Israelites came to Kadesh Barnea, but there are towns, Cadiz above the throne. The river Arn in Deuteronomy, maybe the Italian river Arno. There's just all these, town of Bashan in the Bible, town of Bassano in Italy still exists. There's hundreds of more examples that, you know, it's too hard to explain through words. But basically what I'm saying is, without vowels, these biblical stories work even better in a modern day Italy with the same towns. So it's very possible that the biblical journey of the Israelites led to Moses in conquest of the Promised Land with Joshua took place in Europe, specifically Italy. I hope all that made sense. I know it was a lot. Oh, this was key. This was so key. The Bible mentions Phoenician towns of Tyre and Sidon. Check out my Templar episode on that. So that's all based on the Knights Templar and everything like that. Well, Tyre and Sidon, I cannot fail to see the similarities from the Phoenician towns of Tyre and Sidon, of Phoenicia and Phoenicia. Bible describes ancient Phoenicia as a powerful nation of seafarers that reigned over the entire Mediterranean with colonies in Sicily, Spain, and Africa. Well, it's pretty wild, right? Because Venice would be modern day Venetia. Phoenicia, Scaliger says Phoenician towns have been modern day Tyre and Sidon. So you go there today. Do they fit the biblical descriptions of this lavish and splendor? In 1818, the one town had 1,600 inhabitants. It was barely visible, covered by the sands, zero traces of their former splendor. There's a shallow reef. Big ships can't even get close to the shore. They're hard to replenish. They have no good water supply, but one little estuary of a river, can't sail in it. It's too small. Their main means of survival there is local gardens. Basically, the location is hopeless, right? So does that sound like it was a biblical town of amazing in construction, architecture, a powerful seafaring group lived on this tiny little uninhabitable island? What happened with this land? Did global warming screw it up, right? But Sicily and Italian towns sound much more likely to be these powerful seafarers. They're surrounded by the Mediterranean. And then that's how they went to North Africa, all that stuff. Chapter 12, the mysterious Renaissance epoch as a product of the Scaligerian chronology. The Scaligerian chronology is very fond of the Renaissance motif, and it's a recurrence of the Classical Age. So I kind of, I've been doing with all my pictures and everything like that. So for example, all right, sorry, I had to take a quick break. I told you it was a long one. So this was really, where was I? Okay, basically just to get back where I was talking, I know you guys probably didn't hear the break, but now I feel like I just got dropped back in. They make no sense. The locations of everything's changed, everything. Okay, chapter 12. The Renaissance epic is a product of the Scaligerian chronology. It was very favorable to the Renaissance motif, but it's very similar to the classical motif. So let's start. Ancient Plato, founder of Platonism. Teaching falls into oblivion after it happened for centuries. Then it's revived supposedly by Neoplatonists, Plotinus in 205, 207 AD. Totally accidental that they have the same name. Neoplatonism. Oh, I gotta share my screen. Neoplatonists, then that falls apart as well. That ends. People, they say, boring. Then it's revived again in the 14th century. This time it's revived by Gemisto Platon, P-L-E-T-O-N. I'm sure the three P's is totally coincidental. Don't pay attention to that. Don't worry about that. He revived the ancient Platonism, Platoism, the first one, not the second guy. Coincidentally, the 14th century, you know what? They find Plato's manuscript. What are the odds? And that is the Epic of Platon. Platon, he founds, you know what? He didn't know yet the manuscript was found, but he formed Plato's Academy in Florence. He did find it beforehand. They found it, and then he makes an image of Plato's Academy and the image of ancient Plato's Academy. It was all this work, this ancient work, was revived all in the same freaking timeline. Both Plato and Platon, they write utopian works. What are the odds? They just really like those ideas. Platon wrote Tractate on Laws, failed to reach us in its entirety. However, Plato wrote Tractate by the same title. That one did, though, of course. Thousands of years earlier, why wouldn't that one make it and not the more recent one? It basically, his construction is the ideal state is just like Plato. Plotin in the 205 AD also hoped to have the emperor fund Platonopolis in Italy, where he wanted to introduce communal or aristocratic institutions. It's just this dark age doppelganger thing that we keep seeing Scaligerian chronology. And I've mentioned all of it before, and here's more. Dionysus died in 265 AD. He studied and formulated rules linking like Easter to the spring equinox. Then Dionysus Exiguus, the Little, in the 6th century, did the same thing. Easter deduced the date of Christ's resurrection. Then another Dionysus Batavius studied the same thing, living in the 17th century. They're not it. Don't worry, I got plenty more. You know, there's two famous Homers in Scaligerian history. There's the ancient poet Homer, and of the Iliad, all those things. I didn't read those in high school because I was a bad student. And then there's a medieval Homer. The medieval Homer belonged to the non-existent Charlemagne's court. He was also a poet, though his poems, they didn't reach us, right? And now if you listen to my Dark Ages, Charlemagne Jack didn't exist. And we're going to even get to this, but Charlemagne isn't a name. It means great king. So there's, I'm sure, many great kings in the medieval time that they attributed a name Charlemagne. And this is, again, goes to exactly how we can put zero stock in our chronology. And I'm not saying that all these people are doppelgangers, but it's setting a precedent or a pattern here that they highlighted in the scant history we have available. How is it possible that the same names keep popping up, right? That are doing the same work. I mean, I said examples earlier of like Euclid and other people, and they didn't have the same names, but they did the same exact stuff, and then they die and they bring up the other one. It's just too coincidental. There is no such thing as coincidence. It's a conspiracy, just like the name of the podcast. Okay, Latin. The revival of Latin. Classic Latin falls after ancient time. It degrades into like this not Latin language. But don't worry, during the Renaissance, it's revived around the 8th, 9th century, supposedly. What happened to it? There's these group of the medieval troubadours. They were 11th, 13th century French poets. They supposedly wrote poems of ancient stories. They have poems with knights, but they have also poems with knights, jousting, and their story, they had a Trojan War poem that they claimed was an original one. It wasn't told before. So that's probably because the Trojan War didn't happen in ancient time. It was a replay of the Crusades or something. Or it was a war that happened relatively right around them. The Franks considered themselves the descendants of the Trojans. The Argonauts, which was a prototype of the Crusader, they fought in the Trojan War. So you see, in medieval texts, ancient Alexander also complements the French Slavonic texts, complements the French. Why is Alexander the Great complimenting the French people unless they're Trojans, right? Slavonic texts of the Middle Ages use the name Parisa in order to refer to Paris, the abductor of Helen, when they speak of the ancient Trojan War. Here I have this is the Siege of Troy. Oh, I might have missed a picture. Oh my gosh, I might have missed a lot. Oh, I've missed some photos. Let's go over those real quick. Oh, I'm trying to go back here. Okay. Oh, this is the volcano for the Israelites and Moses, I think. Yeah. See, clearly a volcano. This was the Wall of Jericho, maybe. I don't know. It was one of the biblical stories. I think it's the volcano because that's the smoke coming out to show that it was, in fact, a volcano. Not quite sure with this, but it was probably a biblical picture made with medieval picture style drawings. Here is a rendition of Charlemagne. Okay, so this is the picture we're at now. So this was from the 9th century, supposedly. Here is a picture of the Trojan War. And underneath it, the foundations of Rome are built, or Paris are built on the Trojan War. See, same people. So now if they had not, that was from ancient times, why are the French considering themselves being built on top of the Trojan War remains? That doesn't make any sense. That doesn't make any sense at all. They also have their heavy knight shining armor. It's clearly a Renaissance. This clearly is the Renaissance like time period. But why again are they drawing ancient people in Renaissance gear? We just doesn't make any sense. The French, they traced. Yep, we did that. So Troy is depicted. It falls. They build. Paris is built on top of it. Gog and Magog, they're mentioned in the Bible. They disappear in the Middle Ages, according to Scaligerian chronology. Or is that the Goths and the Mongols of the Middle Ages? And again, I'm just going, oh, this was big. So with Scaligerian chronology, you have the Middle Ages are just so screwed up. So this is on a church that's from 1145 to 1170. They have Pythagoras, Aristotle, Christian saints. So they have pagan worshipers on the same spot of the church next to Christian saints. Now, if these were ancient people, I don't even know if they knew they existed yet because the manuscripts probably weren't found. So how did they know to draw them? And then why would you put pagans on a church? Unless they were current people that were Christians and not from the ancient time, right? That doesn't make any sense. The oldest biography of Aristotle is 1300 AD. The manuscript, it keeps deteriorating quickly. Like in the 19th century, you could easily read it and you can't anymore at all. But according to Scaliger manuscripts, there's even older ones that are over 1,000 years, which are still perfectly legible in great condition. So I guess this one just got wet again, or pollution maybe, or the manuscripts are not anywhere near as old as they really are. The best Greek codices of Aristotle belong to the 10th and 12th century. Aristotle's philosophy had remained in a state of stagnation for 1,230 years. It's just over and over again. Medieval authors often refer to texts that they weren't, that haven't been found yet or unacquainted with, probably because they weren't written yet. I kind of already talked about that and how medieval philosophy faithfully mirrors its predecessor. Long before the ancient discovery of Aesop fables, similar tales were told in the 11th and 13th century. They just copy it, republish it. So I was kind of mentioned this earlier. Ancient people didn't have fixed names like they have today. They had aliases, which meaning their names. And it was like the qualities or their job. So I like Fishman, Goldman, Smith, Lockett, whatever. All these things are, that was their job. And I know, I mean, yeah, but that was their job. That's what they were referred to. And that wasn't just the workers. That's how they referred to their emperor, and how chroniclers referred to kings. Like, pharaohs had different names before and after coronation. If they had multiple coronations in different areas, they had multiple names, like the mighty, the fair. A Roman consul had, in 169 BC, allegedly had 12 names. His son, 38 names. Torah scholars quote 94 names for God. Same thing in Russian history too. So, like, how could you, if you're writing about an ancient time and you use one name and their name is in another location, how would you know that was a different, the same guy? You wouldn't know that was the same guy. That just proves, again, that it just doesn't make any sense at all the way we have it. I'm almost there. I hope you guys are enjoying it. My energy is draining. Hope it's not bad. Okay, so handwritten books remain in existence. This was very interesting as well. Handwritten books remain in existence for a long time after the invention of the printing press. Hard, old habits die hard, right? They're still made in large quantities in the 15th to the 18th century. In the Balkans, handwritten competed with printed ones until the 19th century, not long ago. The entire Irish literature of the 7th to the 17th only exists in handwritten form. Up until 1500, 77% of all books are in Latin. Printed press books are in Latin because Romanic fonts were easier to make. The diacritic signs, which were tough to make, which was why handwritten books remained without competition. Greek, Arabic, Hebraic. This is why, and remember what I said about handwriting means ancient? This is why many, the manuscripts that we have that are ancient manuscripts are Greek, Arabic, and Hebraic, because they're handwritten. That's why they say it. That's how they date them. They don't date them any other way. Does that make sense? Oh, God, it's crazy. Like, my whole mind was blown during this episode. Greece had most handwritten books during the printing press. Same country with a long history, giving the world ancient manuscripts. So how many handwritten books of the 9th and 19th century are actually ancient? How accurate is paleographical dating? That's handwriting dating. They can't. Philanthropists and humanists, they always ask for Greek codices, and they were copied by the collectors. And that's like, so how it was spread out. So again, how is Scaligerian chronology based on handwriting? How can you tell how old a handwriting is if it was copied? There would be the same errors copied. Like, so you... how could you say that this was older than this? You would look, you can't. They always say, like, archaeological evidence, they can't prove this dating thing because of ignorant diggers. And that's what same excuse I heard during the Dark Ages episode. They weren't looking at strata that they were found in. They just wanted gold, which I guess that's okay. I'll give you that like answer. That's fine. This is how they deduce archaeological dating methods. This is freaking ridiculous. They deduce an age of a given European culture by finding out which Egyptian dynasty that each European tribe traded with. So for example, Mycenae made Greek vessels and they were found in the Egyptian mounds in the 18th, 19th dynasty. So they made these Greek vessels, they were found in the Egyptian mounds in the 18th, 19th dynasty. So they're considered contemporary because they were found in that pharaoh's tomb was attributed to 18th, 19th dynasty. They found these Greek ships. So those Greeks must have been the counters of the Egyptian dynasty. Now that similar vessel was found in a Greek person with a kind of pin that's also found in Germany. They are similar dynasty, similar time. And then in Germany, with that pin, they find an urn, which is in Sweden, that they find in a king's barrow. They're all contemporaries. So you can see how absolutely fragile that is. So you're dating everything on Egyptian dating, which we've already said it makes zero sense. There's all these different people who date it. It's a built on a house of cards. It doesn't make any sense. Ooh, okay. I keep thinking, I'm like, oh, I'll just end it there. People got the point. But then I keep getting to a better chapter. So excavations of Pompeii. I think they say it happened in 79 AD. Well, it's not, here we go. In the 9th century, an author, Jacopo Sannazaro, we were approaching the town and we could already see its towers and houses and theaters and temples untouched. So in the 9th century, they saw Pompeii. I thought it was covered in volcanic ash. So how is it, how'd they see it? And historians say, oh, well, there must have been little parts poking out. Well, regardless, no one else sees it until 1748 when it's found by a total accident. They're building a canal and they found it was not excavated until 1860. If the figurine wasn't artful enough, according to these ignorant diggers, they would destroy it or throw it away. Then they'd sell fragments as souvenirs or statuettes of saints. I hope I'm explaining this correctly, that they found this stuff and it was in the 9th century, they could still see it. Or that because that didn't happen in 79 AD, the soot or volcanic ash didn't cover this place until much later, after the 9th century, and they redug it up in 1860. I talked about Nero's palaces being found, which are almost an exact replica of many of the World's Fairs. And for those of you who didn't know this, you can listen to my World's Fairs episode. But Nero's palace, it was this magnificent place. It spun like a carousel. They'd have supposedly huge parties here. There's beautiful frescoes on the wall. It was right after the birth of Christ. But then they covered it up. It took him like 4 years to build it or 10 years to build it. It was beautiful, supposedly. He died. They had lakes in it, canals. They covered it up with the Colosseum. A little boy fell in it. And this was like in the 1500s. And the Renaissance painters came to see like Michelangelo, the frescoes, and that inspired them to paint the Renaissance painting style. So we see this story again that just doesn't make any sense, right? They're just copying and pushing things. They're just mixing everything. It's like confusing for me to talk about because it doesn't make any sense. That's like, it's imitation. That's what they keep saying it is. In this supposedly ancient town of Pompeii, they found frescoes or statues similar to Renaissance style works, like this sundial with hourly divisions, which would have been a very high level at science, even towards the end of the middle or medieval ages. Graffiti art also in medieval and its drawings, like wearing the thing that goes like over your eyes. You know, you can see what I'm doing. Basically stuff that didn't exist on these Pompeii drawings. So if it was truly done in the first century, whenever, you know, near the turn of the millennium, how come we didn't have that stuff yet until another 500 to 600 years? So like I said, it's much more likely that it was destroyed much more recently and the artists weren't emulating them. They were contemporaries in around the 1500s. There are even inscriptions there that don't fit with Scaligerian chronology. Another supposed ancient town, Heraculinum, was covered by Vesuvius. That was one of those two towns of Sodom, that were probably Sodom and Gomorrah. And we find, oh, I guess that's my last picture. They find a picture of, there's a cross over a Christian mantle, like a praying thing, a Christian tabernacle, which was, you know, mostly pagan location at this time. Could have been, I guess, one of the few Christians, but not, you know, the odds of that are very unlikely. But that was one of the places they found. We're almost done here. We're getting, and this is still all really good information. All their ancient monuments are destroying like very quickly now. A large piece of the Sphinx paw has fallen off. So after 5,000 years, deterioration is just happening like that, right? And I guess if it was the only one, they claim it's pollution, that's what's causing it. No, probably because it's much later than they actually say, right? That doesn't make any sense. This is good. Not that they lasted 5,000 years. And everything's happened. Like all these ancient works, they're all doing the same thing. They're all doing the same thing. It's all the same thing. I hope you can see this. The construction of the Cologne Cathedral. Beautiful cathedral. I'm hoping you're seeing this. Look it up if you want. If it's in Germany, it's gorgeous. It's huge. It's amazing. It's just crazy. It said that it was built, it was started, it commenced in 1248, August 15th, 1248, they started building this Cologne Cathedral. And so basically that's right. Oh, but it wasn't. And then they worked on it. 1560, they did some more work. They kind of stopped, or they must have been working very slowly. And it was finally finished in 1826. Well, if you listen to my expositions episode, it's right around the times of the world's fairs. So this makes zero sense. So you're telling me it took 600 years to build this. And it is beautiful. It's gorgeous. It's so intricate. It's amazing. It's huge. But 600 years, there's no pictures or drawings of it before the 17th century in like any maps or documents, manuscripts. So you're building this huge thing and you didn't want to, no one drew a picture of it. No one wrote about it. So for 600 years, it took you, you had to inspire people to build something. You know, no populate for 600 years, no one would keep up with a project. Impossible. Good luck doing like 30 years, 600. All right. So last point. The problem was, I hope you made it this far. I hope you learned something from this, just about how messed up our whole history is. I talked about 7th century Islamic coins and Viking hordes, which supposedly the Vikings didn't start kidnapping Slavonic people and selling them to the Muslims until 9th century. So what does that mean? That means either they paid them in 200-year-old gold coins, or they were it wasn't when they said it happened. So we have a lot of bronze. The Bronze Age, according, is the ancient times. They had bronze weapons, bronze jewelry, bronze utensils. Well, there's an issue with that because copper, it is known, it exists freely. Okay, it was known in prehistoric times, it exists freely. Bronze is an alloy of tin and copper. Well, metallic tin had not yet been known in the Bronze Age, needed to make the bronze. Tin metallurgy is very complex. So in order to make bronze, you would have had to discover tin before that. But there's no tin items that exist. So how are they? So they just said, ooh, this tin, let's use it with the copper to make bronze. Not make anything out of tin? That doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense. So that is the show, guys. Carbon dating doesn't work. That's how they date things. Totally up in the air. They throw away bad data and won't bring it up. Or if it matches, they'll use that data. They use tree rings. That doesn't work. Different trees grow at different rates, different area conditions. All the stuff is dating on ancient Egyptian pharaohs with different people having different names, many different years. We arbitrarily or we purposely picked this history to confuse us. Dates of places and locations change. There's no vowels. It's a mess, dude. It's a total mess. We have no idea. My theory after all this stuff, and I'm just the beginning of this like Tartaria journey, is they're hiding something in our history. Things are much more recent than we believe. I believe based off this, like the Jesus and the biblical stories didn't happen possibly in the Middle East, happened much more recently. That's why there's very little archaeological evidence of it happening. And they're all, it's something, they move these things on us to hide something. Whether that's like Tartaria, I don't know. I don't know if it is, but there's something here. There is something behind this theory that we are not as old as civilization says. I think it's much more recent and we're much closer to our ancient past than we were led to believe. So that's today's episode, guys. I know I made some mistakes during that show. I apologize. I hope you could figure it out and follow along well. I hope you enjoyed it. like it on YouTube, subscribe to me on YouTube, Jack Allen. I'll post this as the myth that it, I'll put this as like chronological myth or scam, and I'll link it on Twitter, and support the show, support your local content creators. It's the only way we can keep doing this is with your support and all my supporters. Thank you so much, guys. I really, really means a lot. And I hope you guys enjoy the episode. So I'm Jack Allen. Thanks for watching Conspiracy or Just a Coincidence. And hey, peace. Have a good day.